Strosel, Your Honor.
Strosel, thank you, versus Doreen Strosel. Logistically, we will be having, as we usually do, 15 minutes for appellants, then 15 minutes for respondent's attorney, and 5 minutes for appellant for rebuttal, if you so choose. We are using a slightly different WebEx platform today. Hopefully this will move smoothly. If for some reason either you can't hear or you lose a video, certainly feel free to let us know or raise your hand. If that does happen, we'll certainly make accommodations for that. It looks like counsel for respondent, if you can speak just to make sure that we can hear you.
Oh, hello, Your Honor.
Okay, you sound good. Counsel for appellant.
Hello, Your Honor. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. We have found in the past, both of you, the picture and the sound quality looks good right now. If for some reason it starts to drop off, we can let you know. Sometimes shutting down the video will help, or just resetting it. Hopefully we won't have to worry about that, but just as an FYI. We also have a screen set for the clock so you can see how much time you have. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record, the party representing, and you may begin your oral argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Michaela Wattenbarger, and I am appearing on behalf of the appellant, Doreen Strosel. The main issue before the court is whether the district court abused its discretion by denying appellant's request to unseal the district court file without properly balancing the reasons for and against the sealing as required by Minnesota law, and when the reasons stated for denying appellant's request have absolutely no support in the record. Under Minnesota law, whether the district court applied the law correctly is a legal question, which the Court of Appeals reviews de novo. And if the Court of Appeals finds that the district court misapplied the law, this amounts to an abuse of discretion, warranting reversal. Appellant would submit that the district court in this case did misapply the law relative to the sealing of the file. By sealing the file without any basis to do so, and by declining to unseal the file based on findings that are clearly erroneous and without balancing the interests at stake as required by Minnesota law.
Well, counsel, I think the district court did provide some reasons. Isn't your argument really that they're not adequate reasons? Because the district court did provide some.
The district court provided some reasons retroactively in its order declining to unseal the file. With respect to that, the argument is that, yes, the reasons are not only inadequate, but entirely unsupported by the record, that there simply is nothing at all in the record to support the district court's findings and respondents' arguments, essentially, for why the file should remain sealed. But the initial order sealing the file, there simply were no findings at all in that order. It simply stated respondent's request to seal the file and ordered that it be thus sealed.
Counsel, was that by design? Was that by choice? I mean, it looks to me like there's some indication in the record that there was an agreement to have a discussion off the record about this issue, and then it was used as part of a bargaining chip and negotiations that occurred outside of the recorded proceedings.
That is what the district court indicated in its order declining to unseal the file. However, that appellant's position is that that's not accurate. Appellant did not object at that time to the sealing of the file, but there was no stipulation to seal the file. And even if there had been, appellant's argument is that that would be insufficient, would have been insufficient to seal the file to begin with.
But don't courts generally honor agreements that the parties enter into prior?
Your Honor, appellant's position is that it wasn't an agreement, it wasn't a bargained for exchange. Which is what an agreement is. That it was respondent's request, appellant declined or did not object to the sealing of the file, And the reason for that had nothing to do with financial agreements. In fact, all the financial agreements had already been reached prior to the start of the trial in this matter. The only outstanding financial issues when the trial started, and especially by the time the discussions occurred relative to the sealing of the file, the only outstanding financial issues were child support, conduct-based attorney's fees, and allocation of the custody evaluator's fees. And there were no ongoing negotiations on those points. So it's not clear what financial settlements would have been impacted.
But isn't it true, Ms. Wattenberger, that when you have a dissolution, there are agreements reached regarding property that do require some expectation of continued employability? And in that sense, it's not that the proposed order or the sealing of the file was necessary to reach an agreement, but it might be necessary to make sure the agreement that was already reached is one that can be followed through.
That may be the case in some cases, Your Honor, but that's not the case here. In this case, there was a property agreement reached. The property was divided prior to the first day of trial. Spousal maintenance wasn't an issue in this case, and that would have potentially been an issue where ongoing employability would have been incredibly important. Here, there was an antenuptial agreement signed before the party's marriage. Early on in the trial, appellant indicated that she was not challenging that antenuptial agreement. So spousal maintenance was not an issue in this case. Child support, one, wasn't negotiated, but two, ended up ultimately being reserved by the court. So that wasn't an issue determination was even reached on by the court, but certainly wasn't one that was being negotiated by the parties. So that may be the case in other cases. It just simply was not the case here. And not to mention the fact that there simply is nothing on the record to indicate that was the case. There's nothing indicating that there were financial agreements that were ongoing, financial negotiations that were ongoing, either at the time of the discussion of the sealing of the file or by the time the file was actually sealed.
But wasn't there a concern that there were allegations of domestic abuse and that sealing of the record was important to prevent a potential harm to husband's employment? So that seems to be directly related to the whole issue of finances. In other words, if for some reason husband lost his job, then wouldn't all of the issues and all the agreements reached regarding spousal maintenance, et cetera, wouldn't those potentially fall apart and have to go back, you'd have to go back to square one?
Well, again, spousal maintenance wasn't an issue in this case because of the antenuptial agreement. So that wasn't negotiated, that wasn't decided upon. It was indicated early on at trial that appellant wasn't challenging the antenuptial agreement, which was very clear on that point. And the property division itself, it was accomplished prior to the trial. It's in this.
Let me ask. Can I ask two part follow-up? Well, number one, what do you mean by accomplished? Was there a signed stipulation? What does that accomplish mean? And then secondly, if you're saying that there were no financial issues at all, but however, child support was still open or reserved or not yet decided, then would it have been sufficient for the district court to have said employability specifically because it's necessary to for the child support, potential child support dispute?
By accomplished, I mean that the parties had reached binding settlement agreements. They had charts that they had their initials signed off on. There was no ongoing discussions on those points. They had entered into settlement discussions. They had reached agreements on those points. They had signed off on those agreements.
You mean like with the mediator?
Correct. With respect to child support, well, one, I guess I'm not sure, you know, the fact that it was reserved, I guess I'm not sure how the sealing would necessarily impact that point. It wasn't being negotiated, so it couldn't have impacted the party's discussions on that point. It wasn't, and again, it was ultimately reserved, and so it's still at any point, you know, a party could go back to address that issue potentially. So I guess I'm not.
Yeah, I think the connection for me is the employability part, and obviously that's really important when you're deciding child support. And so if there's some chance that the employability would be thrown off, then you do potentially have, you upset whatever decisions the parties had made at that point to reserve it. Under the expectation of continued employability, they made some decisions about what to dispute and what not to dispute, potentially.
Right. First I would note that the parties didn't agree to reserve that issue. They actually did present arguments regarding what each of their respective incomes were and so on and so forth. The court decided to reserve that issue. I can't read the district court's mind, but I would think because at that time the appellant, our client, was in the process of moving to Germany and she had a position in mind but hadn't secured that.
So it sounds like employability would be really important to the child support decision at that point.
So with respect to respondents' employability, I guess I would note that it's hypothetical. His argument that his employability could be impacted by abuse allegations is purely hypothetical. There's nothing on the record indicating that may be the case. He didn't submit evidence of any kind other than his conclusory statement that he believes it could potentially impact him.
But the district court did reference that, and in district court crediting that's a credibility determination that the district court made that we give deference to. So that's what it seems like the district court certainly did here by referencing that.
The district court referenced that as a reason, but I guess that's appellant's concern with the order declining to unseal the file is that there is no support on the record either for the assertion that the district court made that it was done with financial negotiations in mind or that it could impact his employability.
So this goes to my original question, which is, was all of this discussion about employability or the potential impact on a job search, was all of that discussion had off the record?
There was. I don't recall exactly what was discussed off the record, but any discussion regarding respondents' reasons for wanting to seal the file prior to that initial order sealing the file would have occurred off the record. There simply was no discussion on the record on that issue prior to the order sealing the file. I know respondent noted in his responsive brief that there was a discussion a year earlier where respondent raised it without noticing the issue in the responsive motion at a motion hearing. And the court indicated at that time kind of that it wasn't necessarily inclined to do so, but indicated that if a motion was filed on that issue, the court would consider it.
I think the district court rightly was acknowledging the fact that that's not preferred to have the record sealed, which is certainly consistent with the law. But in terms of the domestic abuse allegations and the potential impact on his employment, if that information is publicly available, first of all, your client did not oppose that, and at a minimum did not oppose it, so agreed to it initially. But second of all, the district court also has authority under Administrative Rules of Civil Procedure 26.03 to protect a party from embarrassment. And so it does seem that there's at least a basis in the law for the district court's reasoning and rationale as to why it should seal the record, even though that's not necessarily preferred.
So, Your Honor, with respect to Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure 26.03, my reading of that rule is that chapter has to do with discovery and limitations on discovery relative to a court matter. This is about sealing an entire court file, not having to do with discovery, but sealing every single thing that was submitted to the court, every part of it.
True, but case law does also allow a district court the authority to seal documents and protect the confidentiality of documents that have been submitted. So the district court clearly has authority to do that.
Correct. Under Schumacher, the district court does have the ability to look at that issue. However, in doing that, the court in the Minnesota Supreme Court in Schumacher noted, one, that there is a presumption of public access. There needs to be strong countervailing reasons presented for restricting access, and those must be balanced against the reasons provided for the reasons for restricting access that are provided must be balanced against the strong interest in public access, and in this case, appellant's due process rights moving forward. In that she would submit that she was previously limited in her ability to present facts on appeal in her prior appeal in this matter, and very well may be similarly limited in her ability to present facts moving forward, considering the fact that the Minnesota District Court, given the child's age, has approximately 11 years remaining of jurisdiction over child custody, parenting time, and child support.
So on the prior appeal to this court, that's over and done with, and we do not revisit prior decisions. So if there was a concern as to whether she could raise issues or raise facts that had been under seal, that would have been the appropriate time to raise it. So actually, I'm a little concerned now with that argument, because that seems foreclosed.
Your Honor, appellant is not asking this court to revisit any decisions made in its prior appeal. Appellant is noting that in her prior appeal, she was very conscious of the fact of her responsibility to limit her discussion of sensitive matters according to this court's order pre-argument. To limit it to more general statements, and to be careful to limit, disclosure of sensitive statements. So her issue isn't necessarily looking back at that; it's looking forward. The Minnesota court has ongoing jurisdiction for a number of years remaining, and in the event that either party in this case exercises their right to appeal any future orders in this case, there's a concern that there may be a chilling effect on appellant's ability to fully make her arguments in future matters.
Okay, thank you, counsel. And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing, and you may begin.
Clark Beck and O'Connell, and I am legal counsel for the respondent, John Richard Strosel. I would say first with regard to the standard of review, however, I think there is an issue before we even get into standard of review. And that is the decision, that original determination to seal the file is not properly before this court. Now, we had this issue in the argument prior, in the prior argument with Judge Hooten, when issues are not raised, you forfeit the right to raise that issue. In our brief, we believe an agreement was reached based upon the statements made by counsel to seal the file. So I want that to be clear first. However,
but was there really an agreement reached, or was it just we don't oppose the motion? I didn't see anything in the record indicating that the parties came before the court and said, we have reached an agreement as to sealing the file, and we'd like the district court's blessing and acknowledgement of that agreement.
Right, and I understand what you're saying. If we go to the specific words, Your Honor, and these were the words, Your Honor, the last thing, but it's agreed to. We talked to Ms. Jansen when we were here last week, but just as part of the record, it's my understanding appellant is not objecting to sealing the record. So was it an agreement to seal the record, or an agreement that I'm not objecting to seal the record? Now, it is two legal concepts, because one of them is straight up agreement and the other is waiver. But either way, I don't think, based upon the fact that they waived that issue with regard to the original determination to seal the file, you can't come back later. And I would note with regard to the issues of forfeiture.
But counsel, they made a motion to unseal the file, and that is properly before us.
The motion to unseal the file is properly before you. The original decision to seal the file is not properly before the court.
So let's talk about the merits of the motion to unseal the file. And what in the record is actually so confidential? I mean, keeping in mind that we've already had a public discussion in this argument about allegations of domestic abuse, and this file is not sealed. So why should the district court's file be sealed?
Well, the district court made specific findings as to why to seal the file to protect respondents' income.
And what's the factual basis in the record for that finding? Because I did not see any.
The factual basis, as far as a clear and specific reasoning why?
Any evidence that sealing the file was necessary to protect the respondent's income? Was there testimony? Was there evidence of any kind, an affidavit, anything?
There was a motion. There was an affidavit. The affidavit of my client, and I'm looking for the date of that particular affidavit, does support that request, and the court did.
And what was the actual factual support for the request?
Factual basis for the support for the request is there are allegations of domestic abuse. Those allegations would impact my income.
How?
Impact my income because the potential of losing employment. And the potential for losing employment was high.
And what was the factual basis for that conclusion?
The factual basis is set forth in the affidavit provided by my client, and the judge agreed with that. Now, the part that's missing, and I agree, I wish there would have been a record of what took place, because the judge has an understanding of what took place in chambers with regard to the initial agreement. And so the judge had that understanding of why and what's the purpose and why we're protecting the income. And ultimately, protecting the income, there's a disagreement because protecting the income is important with regard to child support. And first, I would like to point out that the motion to unseal comes after the determination is made with regard to custody. The agreement to seal, or lack of waiver, or waiver of the argument against sealing, came before the determination with regard to custody. With regard to child support, that issue was not determined. Appellant.
Counsel, let me ask you another question. So there's an objection to the release of information regarding allegations of of domestic abuse. What about the rest of the file needs to be sealed? Is there anything confidential in the remainder of the file that needs to be sealed?
Well, it is my client's position, and the court determined that issue weighed into the other issues, which is why there was a determination that the court made. There is not a specific finding with regard to the other portions and the other portions why they'd be sealed. So I recognize the court never went there and never made this statement. The issue with it is the file is replete with allegations. And if you go to an understanding that some of those allegations were presented, if you go to Judge Hooten's order, where she says there is sufficient information for the court to make their findings with regard to the lack of credibility with regard to those issues, that they're just replete through the trial.
Right. So, Mr. Jerebek, if I could break these two issues apart, the first to me is kind of where does the, what is the requirement on a district court in terms of document by document or part of a document versus sealing the entire file. And you look at the case law and the mention of automatically restricting. So if I could break that piece apart, which is what you were just talking about, apart from the previous question about what is the connection between employability and the allegations here, especially in light of what you just mentioned, that in the public Court of Appeals order, the Court of Appeals discusses the sexual assault allegations and says that the father categorically denied, or that says the district court found that the father categorically denied the incident, testified he never forced himself upon mother, et cetera, et cetera. So there is some already a public reference to it. And as far as I could tell, father's employability was not impacted by the litigation or the public briefing, the public argument at this court, or the court's opinion here. So going back to that point, what is it that connects these allegations that are not public yet, the part of it that's not public, how does that impact employability? Because it can't just be allegations. As you know, I don't want to say it's a garden variety issue in family cases, but it happens in a lot of family cases, and that's not a justification to seal every family case that has domestic abuse in it. So the fact that there are allegations made by itself can't be enough, since that's already public and it happens so frequently, right?
The fact that there are allegations, and what you are saying is precisely what Judge Broughton said. Judge Broughton does that at the beginning and says, unless there's something else, I need some additional information before making a determination to seal. That's what he originally said, right? Now, you had this determination, you had this agreement with regard to limiting the information. Yes, information.
I'm not focused on the agreement anymore. I'm looking at the motion to unseal. Let's assume that there was a full agreement. They stipulated, signed their names. We're now a year later, and there's now a motion to unseal saying it's time to unseal this. It's not going to be a problem anymore. And I'm looking at the district court's findings at that point to see what would have been sufficient and what did they do, and comparing those two things.
Sure. And what Judge Broughton does is, with regard to that, he does. And to his credit, he goes back and says, here's what happened during the initial agreement, and here's what is happening now with regard to things. It continues to protect the income of respondent. And that is an ongoing issue, and that is what Judge Broughton said. That's his findings.
Well, I mean, I see that conclusion that Judge Broughton reaches. The part I'm struggling with, and this is getting back to Judge Frisch's question, is what is it that ties the employability to not even just the general allegation, because that's already public. So it has to be something else that you're sealing in order to protect his income. And so I guess I'm asking, where does the district court make that connection?
Right. The district court makes the connection, I believe, in the specifics of the allegations that are made. Now, again, there has been limited talk at the Court of Appeals, and there has been some broader talk with regard to the issue and the allegations. In fact, there are not specific pieces with regard to those allegations, and it's our belief that the specifics with regard to the allegations, even if a court made a determination that it's not accurate, impact employability in particular circumstances.
So,
and these are one of those circumstances.
Does it matter what the person's job is? Because I could see potentially if you were an elementary school teacher and there were allegations of physically disciplining your child, right? And that was the real dispute when it came to custody. And the party wants to keep that part sealed so that they don't have a problem with their job. Fine, there's an easy, obvious connection there, but I don't know that there's an easy, obvious connection given what I think the last finding was about where father's employed as an executive in a company. What is does it matter where you're employed? Or is it sufficient to say you were alleged to have sexually abused your wife, and that's all we need, because any employer anywhere who knows that is going to want to, like, where's the specific connection or relationship between those allegations and his job?
The specific connection is that he is employed at a company as the COO that was looking at taking a private company public. That's the protection. That's the underlying issue here. Judge Broughton knew that. That piece is important and was important.
So nothing about the specific nature of being COO or the specific business that this company is in.
The big piece with regard to it is a company becoming public. So, Your Honor, you're correct that not all circumstances, a lot of times there are allegations, there's a finding with regard to that allegation is not accurate, and it goes on. But like the situation with a school teacher, there are other situations where individuals have to do their due diligence with regard to individuals employed at a particular place. That's what's the underlying issue here. This comes out, it impacts things with regard to that business.
What if it had been a criminal case and he was acquitted of domestic abuse? Not even the sexual assault part, let's just say physical abuse, but he's acquitted. Is that something that should be sealed?
Number one, and one of the difficult pieces is the parties understanding where things were at and hoping there's going to be income to protect and protect his employment made an agreement, right? And so that piece is the parties reached an agreement. Now, in a criminal case, I am highly doubtful that a court or that the prosecutor is going to make that same agreement. And I understand people, you know, do seek to, you know, have, you know, make determinations with regard to their records. But the difference, I mean, one of the differences here, and I think Judge Broughton points it out, is with regard to what was pending, there was a concern and we needed to protect his income. The protection of the income was necessary, and the parties understood that. The timing is important because once the determination is made with regard to custody, and you had brought up the piece with regard to child support, suddenly the child support changes because mother, who believed she was getting custody, and the evaluation suggested that, once the court made the determination that father was getting custody, the child support is no longer going to mother. At that point in time, and only at that point in time, does she change her position with regard to sealing the file. Thank you, Your Honors. I see my time is up.
Unless any questions from Judge Bryan or Judge Frisch? Okay. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And I believe you might be on mute.
Sorry about that.
Not a problem.
I want to return again, if I may, onto this to the interests that were balanced. And I really want to highlight here the lack of information or evidence in the record to support respondents' claim and ultimately the court's finding that if the file was unsealed, that it would have an impact on his employability. There simply is nothing in the record to indicate that his employment would have been in jeopardy other than his own claim that his employment would have been in jeopardy. There's nothing to indicate that there was anyone out there that was hoping to be able to go to the courthouse to pull the file, to look at allegations. There's simply nothing on the record to show that his employment would have been impacted.
But counsel, as I mentioned earlier, isn't that a credibility determination that the district court made, especially knowing and having a better, much, much better understanding than we do of the file, of the discussions between the parties, of what had happened, including the reference in our earlier opinion by Judge Houghton that the domestic abuse allegations, which are only referenced generally in that opinion, there's no specifics at all. It's only a general reference, noting that the district court found those to be unsubstantiated, that there is insufficient evidence for those.
Your Honor, I guess appellant's position would be that it isn't strictly a credibility determination, that it's a factual determination, that there and that there needs to be.
Well, a credibility determination is a factual determination as to what facts to believe.
But in terms of where that's coming from, it's simply respondents' claim. And nothing else.
Right, but you have that all the time. You have he said, she said arguments in district court all the time. And the district court has to make a determination, a factual determination, of which witness and which testimony is credible. And we give great deference to that. I don't see how this is any different.
I would also note, Your Honor, that there was, in this case, a confidentiality agreement that was reached by the parties in 2016 to protect specific information that the parties deemed as confidential. To the extent there was information that respondent wanted to remain confidential, rather than sealing the entire court file, that information, to the extent that it was marked confidential, would have remained confidential and would not have required the entire court file to be sealed. So even if it is the case that he legitimately believed that his employment was in jeopardy and that specific documents or specific allegations would endanger that employment, there was this other agreement in place that would have been able to serve as some protection relative to that.
That was in 2016. A lot of these activities took place well after 2016.
The confidentiality agreement protected information that was marked as confidential throughout the proceedings. And so to the extent that information, allegations were marked as confidential throughout the proceedings, they would have been protected by that confidentiality agreement and wouldn't have.
It certainly would have been a route that respondent could have taken, but the respondent said, I'd like to have the file sealed, and that request had not been opposed by appellant. So why isn't that argument waived or forfeited, and do we even need to consider the first issue that you raise? Isn't that to the wayside? Isn't really the only issue of whether it should be unsealed? Not whether there's discord erred in sealing it in the first instance?
Your Honor, I appellant would also submit that the lack of the basis for the original sealing and the insufficiency of that December 2017 order remain relevant to the analysis of the district court's denial of appellant's request to unseal the file, in that the district court largely justified its denial of the request to unseal the file by providing a retroactive justification for its original sealing and simply indicating that those same circumstances continue on. So I do believe that it's relevant, regardless of the appealability of that specific order.
Counsel, I have one additional question. And looking at, I will readily acknowledge, and I'm sure a respondent probably and realizes this too, there's not much case law in this area. And the little case law that is out there deals with situations, Minneapolis case, for example, where you have a third party saying there's a strong public interest in having access to this information. This case is different than those in that it's actually one of the parties that is requesting that the file be unsealed. So I wasn't persuaded by your case law references to those saying there's a strong public interest. That being said, I understand there's not a lot of case law on the other side either, but I'm struggling with what is the public interest here in unsealing, which seems to be very much a private matter.
Your Honor, I would note that the Minnesota Supreme Court has specifically found that the public has an interest in divorce cases specifically. I'm looking at Castle v. Castle, for instance, a Minnesota Supreme Court case from 1949. which found that marriage is a civil contract to which there are three parties, the husband.
Right, but that's just a general proposition. What I'm asking is more specific. Why is there such a strong public interest in accessing this file, and in particular, the specific details of the allegations of domestic abuse and sexual abuse that the district court found were not even supported by record?
Your Honor, appellant would submit that the public interest in this case, in addition to her private interest in wanting to protect her due process rights going forward, the public interest in this case largely has to do with the fact that the public deserves to know how their elected officials are analyzing important family matters, including custody, parenting time, domestic abuse specifically, and relocation. And as stated,
that's been done already. The district court said those allegations were unsupported, and that was not challenged on appeal. So why is there any interest in that whatsoever then? Public interest.
I guess appellant would submit that public interest continues. That there remains a public interest in those issues and in the. Public being able to hold their elected officials accountable for that. But again, that's in addition to appellant's own personal interest in protecting her due process rights moving forward in this case, in the event that either party exercises their right to appeal future orders in this case.
Okay, thank you. Judge Bryan, Judge Frisch, any additional questions? Okay, thank you both.
Thank you, counsel,
for the arguments and the briefing on this. Very well done on a very, very interesting issue. We'll be issuing our order within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Until then, both counsel, stay well and stay healthy.
Thank you, Your Honors.